All right, take your Bibles to Ephesians. We're going to be in Ephesians here tonight. James, how old were you when you all moved out here? 10 years old. Well, you just haven't gotten any better looking. But but you married well, so for that we're happy about that. All right. Well, it's been neat to see the young children grow up, become adults, and now they're, you know, the kids are now having kids around here, and it's neat to see that. And one thing here about Bellingham Baptist Church, you like to sing. And you just really sing from the bottom of your feet all the way out. I mean, all of you, it just all comes out. And that's good. You know, sometimes you go to churches there and they hardly sing. You know, they just hardly lift their voices. And in some churches, they'll have a praise team and they do all the singing for you. You just sit out there and kind of like mesmerized or fuddled or whatever, you know, and stuff. But I miss a good choir. I think pastors make a mistake by trading their choir for a praise team. They took away a ministry from 30, 40 people and gave it to 3 or 4. And, you know, oh, well, it's just not, you know, it's not hip anymore. I was just talking to someone about an organ. I miss a good organ. I really do. A good organ in a church there is just awesome there. Well, do you have that slide up there? Can you put that picture up there for me there, guys, there, if you would? I'd be grateful. When you get there, give me a wave so I don't have to keep turning back there. And we're going to be in Ephesians here in a moment, chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6. And the question that I have for you tonight, I've entitled the message there, well, is church a pleasure ship or a battleship? You know, I think... It depends on your perspective, depending on what you want your church to be. If you're looking for a pleasure ship, a cruise ship, for your church to be, you know, more geared for that area, you're going to be asking kind of questions there. You know, well, you know, do I like the music they play in the ballroom? Do I like the captain and his crew? Are they charming? Is the service good around here? Am I being well fed? Or maybe you're concerned, you know, are my needs being met promptly? You know, are people being friendly and shaking my hand and doing all these different things? Am I comfortable here? And is my family getting the maximum fun out of this? And if you're asking, do I want to cruise with them again, then you're probably thinking church should be a pleasure ship. But if you're minded this way, if your questions you're asking, is the ship on a clear and noble mission? Or maybe you're thinking, does the captain submit to a higher authority? Is the crew properly trained and equipped for their mission? Are they AWOL or faithful at their post? Do they take their battle seriously? Are they honored for their efforts? If you're minded to question things in that manner, then you're probably thinking that the church is more of a battleship than it is a pleasure ship. Now, of course, we're using some metaphors, but the truth is, a lot of churches out there are basically trying to entertain you or trying to educate you. Trying to challenge you for service or make things fun and fruitful for you. Someone said, well, you know, these analogies of battleship or a pleasure ship, we probably should be saying it should be a fishing ship. The fact is that church is really not for our pleasure. It's for our service. It's for our service. Metaphors have a limit. We could maybe use the metaphor, is church a clubhouse or is it a lighthouse? My dad, I don't know why, he had this notion it would be fun just for 1 week, not a long time, but just for 1 week, to spend a week working at a lighthouse. My dad had that notion there. My mom came across an advertisement in the paper. And they were looking, I'm speaking British, advertisement, sorry. And they were looking there was a job. I don't know why she was reading jobs wanted, but anyhow, she was looking down there and she said, look, there's a job. Look at this, honey. There's a job for a lighthouse keeper. And he looked it over there and he said, honey, it's not lighthouse keeper. It's a light housekeeper. Anyhow, but using these metaphors, I want to take us to Ephesians chapter 6, and we're going to see that there's a lot of usage in the Bible about giving us this picture that we're in a battle, we're in a fight, and we ought to be soldiers of the cross. And the first thing that I want to get across here is that if we're going to be disciples of the Lord, disciples have to be disciplined. If you're going to be a proper disciple. And if you're going to be a soldier, you have to have discipline. That's why we send you to boot camp. Boot camp is to break you from what you were and to make you into what they want to make you to be. And you're going to come to the realization, you no longer belong to yourself. You belong to the army or whatever it is that you signed up for. And you're no longer in control of when you get up, what you're going to do with your time. They're going to tell you what to do with it. Now, how many of you served in the armed forces in some way, some manner there? Okay. Now, I never had that privilege. My dad did. He served in the Navy for a short time. In fact, when we had his funeral here a few months ago, we were able to get the color guard come and taps being played. Well, they actually didn't do taps. They did something different. No, they did play taps, yeah. I thought they were going to do the bell, but they did the taps. And it was probably one of the hardest moving part of the service, tell you the truth, going through that. What an honor it is for those who have served our nation. But, I had the privilege of pastoring a military church for a period of time. Got to know a lot of people in the military and different things. My sister is married to an Army chaplain. And so we have some background knowledge of what goes on somewhat in the military. And it's a different world. It's a society within a society. But within this area, it's filled with discipline. And without it, it doesn't operate. And the same thing's true within the army of the Lord. We have to have some discipline in our lives. If you're there in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 11, again, we see this metaphor coming to life here. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore take unto you the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day. And having done all to stand, stand therefore, and then goes through a list of things to take on within the armor of God. My point here is that if we're going to be in the Lord's army, and how many of you sung that, I may never march in the infantry. You've done the gun, done that with the kids, shoot the artillery, and all that kind of stuff there. But I'm in the Lord's army. Yes, sir. Right. Well, we are supposed to be in the Lord's army. But I think the truth is to be told, most of us have gone AWOL. Or we want to serve the army on our terms, in our way. We're told in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. Have you ever seen on TV how these lions choose their prey? They're not looking for the strongest. They're not looking for the boldest. They're not looking for the people who stay with the pack. They're looking for the person who's kind of wandered away from the pack, gotten a little negligent, gotten a little occupied with other things and not being vigilant of the danger that's out there. And that's the one that's going to be taken down. You know, when we stray from the pack, stray from the congregation and from the group that God has us together as the church, as the body, when we begin to kind of straggle away from those things there, we become prey for the devil. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking. He's looking. He's seeking. He's searching. He'll spot you. And it's interesting how it does. You know, when we start backsliding, when we start slipping away, pastors can almost see it in the behavior of their congregants. And they can tell something's up. They kind of, they don't quite know what it is right away, but they can tell something's just not right there. And they can read it. Sometimes, you know, people used to sit with everything and start sitting forward, moving to the back. Take a note here. It seems like they get getting closer to that door. And it's not so much necessarily their position here where they sit, but when church is over, they're gone. They used to hang around. They used to fellowship. They used to be at certain things there, but, they're gone. Slip away. Then they'll miss that occasional service. And it's just a continual process. And you see it, and it happens there. Sadly, and the roaring lion is looking for that. They're looking for that. And you know what? The devil would love for you to be disgruntled. I'm upset about this. That preacher didn't shake my hand. I didn't like it that they didn't vote on the toilet paper this month. How much we were going to spend on, honestly. We had a fight in one of my churches when I was in college there. We had a fight over what color to paint the one of the Sunday school rooms. Some people were upset because they were going for yellow and they didn't go for blue like the other people wanted. The devil just loves seeing silly things disrupt us. Now, it'd be one thing if they were upset about certain doctrinal issues being preached or not being preached. That would be one thing. Man, sometimes we get so bent out of shape over little things. Folks, we're in a battle. We can't be fussing over, the deck chairs weren't put out in place and on time. We're not a pleasure ship. It's a battleship. We've got to keep our mind to the task here. In 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 13, watch ye, stand fast in the faith, quit you like men. Like men. Be strong. Quit you like men. Wake up. Be alive like men. There's a fight out there. The Bible is full of words like watch ye. It's a military word. Stand fast. Hold your ground. Endure. Don't retreat. Quit you like men. Be alive. Man up. Pull up your big boy pants. Be strong. Toughen up. Well, I'm upset because they just toughen up. Well, I'm offended. We live in an offended society, don't we? Everyone's offended. Well, I'm offended that you're offended. If you're not offended, that offends me. There's a fight out there. 1 Timothy 6:12, fight the good fight of faith. 2 Timothy 4:7, I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. You know, sometimes the service is not always pleasurable, but pleasures are not wrong. It's not wrong to have pleasures. It's not wrong to enjoy. You know, what are you doing laughing in church? It's not wrong to enjoy each other's fellowship and have pleasures. And it's, and the Bible speaks a lot on this. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 13. A merry heart maketh a cheerful countenance, but by sorrow of heart the spirit is broken. Proverbs 17, verse 22. A merry heart doeth good like a medicine. A broken spirit drieth up the bones. James chapter 1, verse 17, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, in whom there's no variables, neither is there shadow of turning. Praise God for God's gift and the blessings he gives us and pleasures that we get to enjoy. They're not wrong to have pleasures. It's not wrong to take time to have pleasures. It's not wrong for church to say, okay, we're gonna have a meeting, and it's not so much going to be for our instruction, but it's going to be for fellowshipping with each other and enjoying each other's company and getting on there. There's not wrong for those things, but we're not here chiefly for those things. When they become the chief aim, then we have gotten our focus on the wrong thing. We're not a social club. Our chief aim is not to please self. Our chief aim is to please God. That's what our chief aim is. Let me introduce you to a man by the name of Neil Postman. Neil Postman used to be a professor at the New York University. I read his book back, oh my goodness, got to be 30 years ago now. His book was entitled Amusing Ourselves to Death. Amusing Ourselves to Death. And in that book, he made a comparison between two British authors. They were novelists. George Orwell, who you've probably heard of, and his writings there. He wrote a book entitled 1984. It was published in 1949, and he died the year after it got published. This was the last book he wrote. And basically, he was making a projection, in a way, of what he feared our world was moving towards, and some of the horrors and fears that he had. And he wrote in his book 1984, and so many were kind of looking out there for this, you know, what was going to happen in 1984. Was he right? The things that he was saying was going to come to pass. Of course, he was well known. Another British author was not so well known, but he also wrote a similar kind of book in 1931, almost a decade earlier. His name was Aldous Huxley. The title of his book was Brave New World. We were keeping our eye on 1984 to see what was going to happen, whether else the terror had happened that he had predicted in his book. We at least had not been visited by the Orwellian nightmares, as Neil Postman writes. He goes on to say, but we had forgotten that alongside Orwell's dark vision, there was another, slightly older, slightly less well-known, equally chilling, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. Orwell warned that there will be that we will be overcome by an external imposed oppression. Huxley's vision was different. There'd be no big brother required to deprive people of their autonomy and maturity and history. That's what Orwell had predicted. Instead, Huxley's vision was, he saw it, that people will come to love their oppression, to adore technologies that undo their capacities to think. What Orwell feared were those who would ban books. Huxley feared, what he feared was that there would be no reason to ban a book, but there would be simply no one wanting to read a book. Orwell feared those who would deprive us of information. Huxley feared those would give us so much information that we would be reduced to passivity. Orwell feared that the truth would be concealed from us. Huxley feared that the truth would be drowned in a sea of irrelevance. Orwell said, People are often controlled by inflicting pain. Huxley in The Brave New World said, they are controlled by inflicting pleasure. In short, Orwell feared that that hate will ruin us. Huxley feared that what we love will ruin us. Isn't that interesting? I think Huxley had a better idea of where our future was leading us. The danger, as he writes, is this, is that our world here in the West is moving from a typographical society to a telegraphical society. A typographical society thinks. They read and think. They dwell. They regurgitate over what they read. They try to understand it. A telegraphical society just sees. They don't have to think. All they do is feel. One is a feeling society, and another is a thinking society. And this is the world that we have developed amongst us, and our young people are being brought up in this. And if we're not careful as parents, we'll let the things of our world make them feelers rather than thinkers. There's danger if we don't address it. I believe it's important for us to say this, and this is kind of hard for maybe for our young people to hear this, but I pray you listen. Take this to heart. It's time to grow up. It's time for our young people to grow up. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 11 says, when I was a child, I spake as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. I heard this lady on the internet just a few days ago. I didn't plan on using this in my message, but it kind of fits in a way. And I listened just a very small clip, and I don't know where who she is or whatever. She actually looked like a liberal to me. But she said this. She said this. We forgot to tell 18-year-olds that when you turn 18, you need to start parenting yourself. Then she went on to explain, what does a parent do? A parent makes us do the things that we should that we should be doing, but we don't want to be doing. But mom and dad, who are our parents, get us doing the things that we should be doing. When we turn 18, we need to grow up and start doing that ourselves and start doing the things that we don't want to do, but do it because it's the right thing to do. We need to grow up. I don't know who she is, but I like that. There's some truth to that. Let me tell you a bit of a story. In Israel, there's a few passages in the Bible talking about bottling up the tears. And it's a practice amongst the women in Israel that when they get married, on their wedding day, they will give to their husband as a gift a bottle of their tears. All the tears that they wept waiting for the right man to marry and that gorgeous, you know, prince to come and take them and stuff there. And they wept nights and stuff and dreaming for this man there. And finally he has arrived and she no longer has to weep anymore. And so now she is giving her bottle of tears to her husband because he is the answer in the dream to all her weeping prayers. I tell you that story because I had a daughter that wept gallons and gallons and gallons. I had to keep buying more bottles and bottles and bottles. For all the tears that she wept, waiting for Mr. Wonderful to show up in her life. And I got to be honest with you, I discovered during that period there, as Tiffany waited, and she thought she was missing the boat. She was going to be destined to be an old maid. Praise God for Tyler. And I got to thinking, you know, there's probably some reasons why she's having to wait so long for Mr. Wonderful. But while during that process, honestly, I got to tell you, there were hardly any candidates out there of young men that were grown up. And then I discovered this wasn't, I'm not alone in this. I began to, to share, some things with some friends and stuff there. And we're in the same boat. 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 There's a multitude of great catches of women out there that are ready for a husband, but they're not husbands out there because they are too busy playing video games. They're not growing up. They're living down in the basement at mom and dad's and stuff, and they're not getting a job, and they're not showing any initiative to be a man. And I know this is painful for our young people and men out there to hear, but we got to grow up. Welcome to the corner of truth and courage, where we have the courage to say the things that need to be said. Growing up in Indianapolis, where my parents' church is at there, I say growing up, I didn't have many years there, but in my early years, we would have an evangelist, Tim Lee, come and speak. How many of you know who Tim Lee is? He is a Marine, fought in Vietnam, and he served his nation and got wounded, blew off both his legs. Came back home in a wheelchair. But man, what a preacher of the gospel. Man, he'd whip this wheelchair around on that platform. And the Baptist temple there, I mean, it's a big church, over 3,000 seats in the auditorium there. And that, that auditorium or that platform was quite high from the ground. And he would whip his wheelchair around and get right up to the edge there and stop there. And preach the word and wheel over here and tell the sinners over here what they need to be doing and all that kind of stuff there. And he wrote something a few years back about the soft generation. We're creating a soft generation. People are just offended of this, that, and the other, and people are not taking responsibility in growing up. There's a time that we produced where our young boys could stand as men. And now those who are men are still standing as boys. God forgive us. We're spending too much time in front of the TV. Spending too much time on our devices. Spending too much time on the video games. Again, it's not wrong to have pleasures. But there's a time for this, and there's a time for that, and there's time for this stuff. And the problem is that we are not making good use of our time. We live in a society where we feel, we don't think. TVs and devices are becoming babysitters. And it's easy. It's easy, isn't it? Got a kid here who's just giving you heartache and everything else there and stuff there. And okay, Johnny, be quiet over here and you pop, 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 play with this. We go to restaurants and everyone's on their phone.